Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. This is the only hour that ever was or ever will be. For during this hour, you will decide your future and thus our collective futures. I'm William Cooper. Folks, our members, the CAGI members, the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, are out there all the time gathering information, conducting research, sending it all in for evaluation and to be compiled into meaningful reports so that we can use it on this broadcast, in the newsletter, and disseminate the truth to the world. Tonight you're going to hear from one CAGI member who has been extensively researching vaccinations, immunizations, inoculations, as they are called by the medical fraternity, and I mean fraternity in every sense of the word. Folks, I want you to pay close attention tonight, for a lot of work has gone into this broadcast by one of our operatives. His name is Alex Loglia. He's going to be talking to you about something tonight that you have not ever heard before, and that you are probably not properly prepared to hear. Nevertheless, you must and will hear it. As always, our admonition is don't believe what you hear until you've checked it out for yourself. But folks, what you're going to hear tonight is the truth.
You in advance, folks, that tonight I am going to do a lot of reading. I'm going to quote a lot of different people, and I want you to understand from the start that I am not making up anything from what I'm going to be saying here tonight, but that everything I mention here is scientific fact, which I have discovered in my own research. I make this warning because you are not going to want to believe what you are about to hear. I'm going to talk to you tonight about vaccinations. Most of you out there have probably received some form of vaccination at one point or another in your life, or you may have children who are in the process of receiving vaccinations. Well, I have some very bad news for you folks. You once again have been conned. I am sure that you, like myself, have been raised to believe that doctors know what is best for you, that everything that comes out of the medical industry is done to help you, and that everything that doctors do is safe and well-tested and proven, vaccinations included. Unfortunately, we have all been lied to, and once again, me and all of you are responsible because we would rather put the responsibility of our health into someone else's hands instead of taking charge of our own lives and our own well-being. I'm going to say this bluntly so that it will make an impact on you and so you will hear me. You and your children are being poisoned, folks, and you are making pharmaceutical companies incredibly rich, and you are also unknowingly helping along the progress of what is going to become the greatest epidemic that the human race has ever seen, namely AIDS. Due to ignorance and foolish trust in the experts, you have been had. Now, the theory of vaccinations is based on four basic principles. Number one, vaccinations are relatively harmless. Number two, vaccinations are effective. Number three, vaccinations are responsible for the decline in infectious diseases. And number four, vaccinations are the only practical and dependable way to prevent both epidemics and potentially dangerous diseases. But, ladies and gentlemen, every single one of these assumptions is totally false. The theory of vaccination states that by giving a person a mild form of a disease via the use of an immunizing agent, specific antibodies are produced that will protect the organism when the real thing comes along. It sounds plausible enough, but it is totally wrong. No greater lie has ever been told to you. And believe it or not, vaccinations will not protect you from any disease. And you can still get, and many people are getting, measles, smallpox, polio, rubella, diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, and other common diseases even after they have been vaccinated. This is a matter of public record, and I will give you some statistics later on that will truly shock you. Let me read you a little portion from Waylon James's book, Immunizations, the Reality Behind the Myth. But before that, write down this author and title. That's Waylon James, W-A-L-E-N-E, last name James, J-A-M-E-S. And the title is Immunizations, the Reality Behind the Myth. Most of what I'm reading from here tonight comes right out of that book, and it's very well footnoted and documented. So to save time, I'm not going to read you all the references. But you can get the book, and you can check it out, and you can check out the references. Here we go. Besides introducing foreign proteins and even live viruses into the bloodstream, each vaccine has its own preservative, neutralizer, and carrying agent, none of which are indigenous to the body. For instance, the triple antigen, DPT, which is the diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus vaccine, contains the following poisons: formaldehyde, mercury, and aluminum phosphate, and that's from the Physician's Desk Reference, 1980. The packet insert accompanying the vaccine lists the following poisons: aluminum potassium sulfate, a mercury derivative called thimerosal, and sodium phosphate. The packet insert for the polio vaccine lists monkey kidney cell culture, lactalbumin hydrazolate, antibiotics, and calf serum. The packet insert for the MMR vaccine produced by Merck Sharp and Dohme, which is for measles, mumps, and rubella, lists chick embryo and neomycin, which is a mixture of antibiotics. Now, chick embryo, monkey kidney cells, and calf serum are all foreign proteins, which are biological substances composed of animal cells, which, because they enter directly into the bloodstream, can become part of our genetic material. They can become part of our genetic material, folks. Remember that. It's going to be important later. These foreign proteins, as well as other carriers and reaction products of a vaccine, are potential allergens and can produce anaphylactic shock. Folks, anaphylactic shock is a nice word for brain damage. Reading on. Another problem with vaccines is that they go directly into the bloodstream without filtering by the liver. Dr. William Albrecht tells us the following, quote, "If you take water into your system as a drink, it goes into your bloodstream directly from the stomach. But if you take in fats, they move in through your lymphatic system. When you take other substances, like carbohydrates and proteins, they go into the intestines and from there are passed through the liver as the body's chemical filter before they go out into the blood and circulate through the body. Most of your vaccination serums and proteins are not filtered by the liver. Consequently, vaccinations can be a terrific shock to the system. Injections of foreign substances like viruses, toxins, and foreign proteins into the bloodstream via vaccinations have been associated with diseases and disorders of the blood, brain, nervous system, and skin. Rare diseases such as atypical measles and monkey fever, as well as such well-known disorders as premature aging, allergies, etc., have been associated with vaccines. Also linked to immunizations are such well-known diseases as cancer, leukemia, paralysis, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, and sudden infant death syndrome." Folks, I'm not making this up. This is mostly out of Physician's Desk Reference 1980 and Organic Consumer Reports of 1977. Now, let me tell you some of the effects of vaccinations that the medical profession admits to as expected side effects of various vaccines, again from Waylon James's book. From the packet insert for the DPT vaccine, which is for diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, under side effects and adverse reactions are listed the following. 1, severe temperature elevations, 105 degrees or higher. Collapse with rapid recovery. Collapse followed by prolonged prostration and shock-like state. 4, screaming episodes. 5, isolated convulsions with or without fever. 6, frank encephalopathy, which is brain damage, with changes in the level of consciousness, focal neurological signs, and convulsions with or without permanent neurological and or mental deficit. Nice big words, folks, but it's talking about brain damage, shock, and severe temperature. The occurrence of sudden infant death syndrome, which is SIDS, that's the acronym, has been reported following the DPT vaccine. Now, the whooping cough vaccine, which is a component in the DPT vaccine, has such a high percentage of neurological complications, including death, that several physicians have decided not to give it at all. And that is quoting Dr. Robert Mendelsohn. He goes on to say, Dr. Edward B. Shaw, a distinguished University of California physician, has stated in the Journal of American Medical Association in March 1975, I doubt that the decrease in pertussis is due to the vaccine, which itself is a very poor antigen and an extremely dangerous one, with many very serious complications. Reading on from Wayleen James's book, a recent study at UCLA estimates that as many as one in every 13 children had persistent high-pitched crying after the DPT shot. This may be indicative of brain damage in the recipient child, says Dr. Bobby Young. And later on he says, quote, you know, we start off with healthy infants, and we pop them not once, but three or four times with a vaccine. The probability of causing damage is the same each time. My greatest fear is that very few of them escape some kind of neurological damage out of this. An even more recent figure on the reaction to the DPT vaccine indicates that one in every 100 children react with convulsions or collapse or high-pitched screaming. One out of every three of these, that is, one in every 300, will remain permanently damaged. Now, according to the testimony of the Assistant Secretary of Health, Edward Brandt Jr., before the U.S. Senate Committee on May 3, 1985, every year, 35,000 children suffer neurological damage because of the DPT vaccine. Bet your doctor didn't tell you that, folks. That just makes you wonder why he never told you this, doesn't it? It also makes you want to run out and get your kids vaccinated, doesn't it? Well, it gets worse. Here are some of the long-term effects of vaccines. This brings us to perhaps the most serious charge against vaccination, the subtle long-term effects. And again, I'm reading from Wayleen James's book. Evidence suggests that immunizations damage the immune system itself. By focusing exclusively on increased antibody production, which is only one aspect of the immune process, immunizations isolate this function and allow it to substitute for the entire immune response. Because vaccines trick the body so that it will no longer initiate a generalized response, they accomplish what the entire immune system seems to have been evolved to prevent. That is, they place the virus directly into the blood and give it access to the major immune organs and tissues without any obvious way of getting rid of it. The long-term persistence of viruses and other foreign proteins within the cells of the immune system has been implicated in a number of chronic and degenerative diseases. In 1976, Dr. Robert Simpson of Rutgers University addressed science writers at a seminar of the American Cancer Society and pointed out the following. Immunization programs against flu, measles, mumps, polio, and so forth may actually be seeding humans with RNA to form latent proviruses in cells throughout the body. These latent proviruses could be molecules in search of diseases, including rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, lupus, Parkinson's disease, and perhaps cancer. Remember that, folks, seeding humans with RNA to form latent proviruses in cells throughout the body. That's important. Moving on. Live viruses, the primary antigenic material of vaccines, and don't be scared by antigenic, folks, it just means any agent that will stimulate antibody production. The primary antigenic material of vaccines, which are live viruses, are capable of surviving or remaining latent within the host cell for years without provoking acute disease. They attach their own genetic material as an extra particle or episome to the chromosomes of the host cell and replicate along with it. This allows the host cell to continue its own normal functions for the most part, but imposes on it additional instructions for the synthesis of viral proteins. This presence of antigenic material within the host cell cannot fail to provoke autoimmune phenomenon, such as herpes, shingles, warts, tumors, both benign and malignant, and diseases of the central nervous system, such as various forms of paralysis and inflammation of the brain. So what we're actually talking about here, folks, is viral genetic material being incorporated into your cells and laying the groundwork for autoimmune diseases. And we're going to get into this right now. Reading on. If the components of the immune system were designed to help the organism discriminate self from non-self, as a number of researchers believe, then latent viruses, autoimmune phenomenon, and cancer would seem to represent different aspects of chronic immune failure, wherein the immune system cannot recognize its own cells as unambiguously its own or eliminate parasites as unequivocally foreign. By the same token, we might say that the inability of the immune system to distinguish between harmful and harmless substances in the environment, as in the case of allergies, constitutes another aspect of chronic immune failure. Folks, what they're saying here is that vaccines encourage chronic immune failure by virtue of the genetic material that you get shot up into your bloodstream whenever you get vaccinated. The well-known author, lecturer, and health activist Betty Lee Morales writes that her parents, who were naturopathic doctors, predicted 50 years ago that cancer would be epidemic in her lifetime as a delayed result of mass vaccinations. Dr. Robert Mendelson, who is an authority on vaccinations and truly one of the most heroic medical doctors in this century, because he is telling the truth, extends this idea when he says, quote, "I think that most of the degenerative diseases are going to be shown to be due to x-rays, drugs, and polluted food, additives, preservatives, and immunizations." With all of our discoveries about the effects on the human body of ingesting substances not found in nature, one thing we ought to know by now is that many of these toxins, and vaccinations are toxins by definition, kill slowly or kill only after the lapse of significant periods of time. And that's a quote from Nicholas von Hoffman in his Washington Post column. Now, from around the world, from West Germany, we read of more vaccination casualties. A reader writing to Organic Consumer Report, June 13, 1968, mentions an article which appeared in Medical World, which stated that about 3,000 children each year suffer varying degrees of brain damage as a result of the smallpox vaccination. This same writer mentions another medical journal in which Dr. G. Kittel reported that in the previous year, smallpox vaccination damaged the hearing of 3,296 children in West Germany, and 71 became totally deaf. Hearing loss was reported by Dr. William Albrecht, who said in the article I quoted earlier that a typhoid shot he received made him stone deaf in one ear as well as deathly ill at the time of the shot. Now listen to this, folks, because this is where the big con starts. In case after case of deaths, which are really deaths from vaccinations, the cause of death is never listed as the vaccine. Asthma, however, acute lymphatic leukemia, streptococcal cellulitis, tubercular meningitis, and infantile paralysis are just a few of the fake causes of death listed on the death certificate of people who are dying from vaccinations. So much for these poisons being safe. Now, let's see how effective they are. Statistics from around the world show unequivocally that infectious diseases like smallpox, diphtheria, whooping cough, scarlet fever, etc., began to disappear long before vaccinations ever came on the scene. Now, I'm quoting World Health Statistics Annual, 1973-76, Volume 2. Quote, "There has been a steady decline of infectious diseases in most developing countries, regardless of the percentage of immunizations administered in these countries." I'll bet you didn't know that, folks. And I'll bet you don't know this either. But I do know this from my research and from my own experimentation. Personal hygiene and diet stop disease, folks. Not injecting virulent, free-floating genetic material into your veins with all kinds of poisonous, cancerous-carrying agents, which is what vaccines are. I'm going to now give you a key as to why you've been conned into believing that vaccines do stop diseases. I'm looking at a chart from Australian Nurses Journal from June of 1981. A top chart shows a curve of deaths per million children under 15 attributable to scarlet fever, diphtheria, whooping cough, and measles. We're looking at a graph here. The graph runs the years from 1860 to 1965, and the death rate just goes down, having peaked in 1860 at 6,000 fatalities per million and bottoming out near zero by 1965. So it's just a downward sloping line going down from 6,000 to zero from 1860 to 1965. It looks really impressive, like that all of these communicable diseases have been wiped out. However, the only problem is that immunizations were introduced into this picture in the early 1940s, when the number of fatalities per million had already dropped from 6,000 to 1,000. Thus, looking at the nearly straight line of the curve, you see that the vaccinations did absolutely nothing because there is no alteration in the rate of disappearance of these diseases from the vaccination at the time when the vaccinations were first started to be administered. A similar chart below it refers to tuberculosis and typhoid from 1900 to 1960. And again, the lines are straight slopes downward, and you can see that the epidemics simply ran their course naturally and are totally unaffected by the vaccination programs, but the medical industry wants you to believe that vaccines are what wipe out diseases, and that is a totally bold-faced lie. If you've never read the book How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff, I strongly suggest you do, because you will get a much better idea of how you've been tricked. Now, I want to tell you about a much bigger lie that you've been fed. I want to talk to you about polio, because polio is the disease that most people think was the great success story of vaccinations. Let me read again from Waylene James's book. Jonas Salk, the discoverer of the Salk polio vaccine, has been called the 20th century miracle maker and the savior of countless lives. We read glowing reports of the dramatic decrease in polio in the U.S. as a result of the Salk vaccine. For instance, the Virginia State Department of Health distributes a folder which tells us that polio vaccines reduced the incidence of polio in the U.S. from 18,000 cases in 1954 to fewer than 20 in 1973 to 78. A recent article in Modern Maturity states that in 1953 there were 15,000 some odd cases of polio in the U.S. and by 1957, due to the Salk vaccine, the number had dropped to 2,499. However, during the 1962 congressional hearings on H.R. 10541, Dr. Bernard Greenberg, head of the Department of Biostatistics of the University of North Carolina School of Public Health, testified that not only, now listen to this, folks, not only did polio increase substantially after the introduction of mass and frequently compulsory immunization programs, but statistics were manipulated and statements made by the Public Health Service to give the opposite impression. You have been lied to, folks. The polio vaccine caused more polio than it protected people from. Moving on, for instance, in 1957, a spokesman for the North Carolina Health Department made glowing claims for the efficacy of the Salk vaccine, showing how polio steadily decreased from 1953 to 1957. His figures were challenged by Dr. Fred Klenner, who pointed out that it wasn't until 1955 that a single person in the state even received a polio vaccine injection. Even then, the injections were administered on a very limited basis because of the number of polio cases resulting from the vaccine. It wasn't until 1956 that polio vaccinations assumed inspiring proportions. The 61% drop in polio cases in 1954 was credited to the Salk vaccine when it wasn't even in the state yet. And nevertheless, by 1957, when the massive vaccination program had taken place, polio was again on the increase. digest that for a minute, folks. Let Bill flip the tape over, and we'll be back in a minute.
Alex is doing a wonderful job, don't you think, folks? Not only is it well-researched, but his delivery for someone who's never done a radio show before is excellent, much better than my first show, I can guarantee you. It's time to take a short break, folks. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short pause.
Okay, back to the Salk vaccine. Other ways polio statistics were manipulated to give the impression of the effectiveness of the Salk vaccine were as follows. One, redefinition of an epidemic. More cases were required to refer to polio as epidemic after the introduction of the Salk vaccine. In other words, you needed 20 cases per 100,000 to have an epidemic before the vaccine was introduced. And after the vaccine, they changed that number to 35 cases per 100,000 per year to require the definition of epidemic. Two, redefinition of the disease. In order to qualify for classification as paralytic poliomyelitis, the patient had to exhibit paralytic symptoms for at least 60 days after the onset of the disease. Now, that's after they started the vaccination programs, folks. Before the vaccination program, which started in 1954, the patient had to exhibit paralytic symptoms for only 24 hours. What this means, folks, is that if you walked into a doctor's office before the vaccine was introduced and you said, oh, I've had paralytic symptoms here, and I've had them for about 2 weeks, they'd say, oh, that's polio. You had it for more than a day. But after the vaccine, if after the vaccine you walked into that same doctor's office and you said, oh, I've had these symptoms for 2 or 3 weeks now, they'd say, oh, wait 2 months. Then we can call it polio. That's how the statistics get manipulated, folks. Moving on. Dr. Greenberg said that, quote, this change in definition meant that in 1955 we started reporting a new disease, namely paralytic poliomyelitis with a longer-lasting paralysis. The third way statistics were manipulated was mislabeling. After the introduction of the Salk vaccine, Coxsackie virus and aseptic meningitis have been distinguished from paralytic poliomyelitis, explained Dr. Greenberg, and prior to 1954, large numbers of these cases were undoubtedly mislabeled as paralytic polio. Now, another way of reducing the incidence of disease by way of semantics or statistical artifacts, as Dr. Greenberg calls it, is to simply reclassify the disease. And I have my own version of this here, folks, from the Los Angeles County Health Index Morbidity and Mortality Reportable Disease Data. I'm looking at a chart of cases of viral or aseptic meningitis and polio from 1955 to 1956. And lo and behold, what do I find? From 1955 to 1966, cases of polio drop from 273 cases to 5. Ah, but number of cases of aseptic meningitis from 1955 to 1956 increases in almost exactly the same proportion from 50 cases to 256 cases. They simply changed the name, same disease, and you thought polio was wiped out at that point. Now, folks, the reality is this. Diseases, like everything else in nature, follow natural cycles. They come in, they reach their peak, and they leave, and no vaccination program on Earth has ever been able to change that. Polio disappeared in Europe between 1940 and 1950 without any vaccination programs whatsoever. In 1958, Israel had a massive type 1 polio epidemic after mass immunizations. And from the same hearings on H.R. 10541 that I talked about earlier, we find out that Massachusetts had a type 2 polio outbreak, and there were more paralytic cases in people who were triple vaccinated than in the people who were unvaccinated. Surprise, surprise, you thought the vaccine protected you, didn't you? Well, most of those cases of polio came from the vaccination. And that's fact, folks. Even Jonas Salk has admitted it now that more than two-thirds of the polio in this country came from his vaccine. From Kudler and Fischer's book, DPT, A Shot in the Dark, we learn, quote, "There is a natural tendency for doctors to underreport whooping cough when it occurs in a vaccinated population and to overreport it when it appears in an unvaccinated population." Which means that if you go into a doctor's office and you are allegedly vaccinated and you have whooping cough, they won't call it whooping cough. They'll call it something else. And that's how we keep all our statistics nice and neat and safe and clean. Same thing's been done with measles, for example, folks. Reading from Wayland James's book. From 1958 to 1966, the number of measles cases reported each year dropped from 800,000 to 200,000. The drug industry claimed this drop was due to vaccinations. However, there are some very interesting discrepancies. Number one, the incidence of measles had already been declining steadily for the past 100 years and was totally unaffected by the immunization programs for measles. Two, it wasn't until 1967 that the live virus vaccine, which is presently used, was introduced because the killed virus vaccine, which came out in 1963, was found to be ineffective and harmful. And yet, the vaccine, which was good and which they alleged did the job, did not even come out during the time that they are trying to take credit for wiping out the diseases in. Three, a survey of pediatricians in New York City revealed that only 3.2% of them were actually reporting measles cases to the health department. And four, in 1974, the Center for Disease Control determined that there were 36 cases of measles in all of Georgia. But the Georgia State Surveillance System reported 660 cases that same year. Folks, you can't believe anything you read, because every single statistic out there has been manipulated and twisted, and that's a fact that I can tell you unequivocally from my own research. Let me read about a little bit of rubella here. A large proportion of children are found to be seronegative, which means they show no evidence of immunity in blood tests, 4 to 5 years after receiving the rubella vaccination. In another study, 80% of Army recruits who had been immunized against rubella came down with the disease. Once again, folks, evidence that these vaccinations will not even protect you against the disease they are supposed to protect you from. And it goes on to say here that the same results were shown in a consecutive study that took place at an institution for the mentally retarded. Now, could the real reason vaccination promise and performance seem so contradictory be that the vaccination premise itself is faulty? As stated earlier, the theory of vaccination postulates that the use of immunizing agents produces a mild form of a disease for which specific antibodies are formed that will protect the body when the real thing comes along. But as I mentioned earlier, it doesn't work that way, and Dr. Alec Burton, who is another brave doctor out there, points out the following, that there are children with what is called agamma globulin anemia, which means that they cannot produce antibodies. And yet these same children develop and recover from measles and other contagious diseases as spontaneously as other children. Now what this means is that there are children out there who can't produce antibodies. Nevertheless, antibodies are the things that vaccines are supposed to stimulate in you against the particular diseases they are designed for. And yet, as shown here by Dr. Alec Burton, even without those antibodies, you will get cured, or you will naturally become healthy again after having this disease without any vaccination. So, folks, so much for the idea that vaccinations are the only way to protect you, and the basic premise that they are built on, namely stimulating antibodies, is totally wrong. Okay. Another quote from Wayland James's book. "The mystery begins to unravel when we look at the work of Drs. Detman and Calicarinos. In one of their articles, they quote Dr. Wendell Belfield of San Jose, California, who says the following, "Antibodies are not needed when the primary immunological defense, which is leukocytes and interferon, etc., is functioning at maximum capacity. Antibody production appears to occur only when the ascorbate level," and ascorbate is just a big word for vitamin C, "in the primary defense components are at low levels, thereby permitting some viruses to survive the primary defense." What this basically means, folks, is that the premise that vaccinations are built upon are totally false. Vaccinations are allegedly designed to stimulate antibody production for the specific diseases they're designed for, and yet, as Dr. Burton showed earlier, antibodies are not even necessary for your body to properly and effectively combat diseases. In short, folks, this means that vaccines do not protect you against the diseases they are supposed to protect you from. Diseases in this day and age have become self-fulfilling prophecy because doctors tend not to diagnose specific diseases if the subject has already been vaccinated against those specific diseases. Vaccinations unquestionably do not guarantee you any protection. Their side effects are disastrous and often worse than the disease itself. And worse still, the premise that vaccines are built upon are pure, unadulterated nonsense. You've been taught that antibodies are little shock troops of your immune system and they go out and kill all the nasty germs that are attacking you day in and day out. And the reality, however, is that antibody production is not your primary immunological defense, and the idea of stimulating them by injecting you with poison serums and free-floating genetic material and all kinds of poisonous carrying agents and stabilizers and vaccines is completely absurd. Okay, let me read you a little bit about immunity here because it's going to become important over the next few minutes of what I'm talking about. When immunity to a disease is acquired naturally, and again from Wayleen James's book, the possibility of reinfection is only 3.2%, according to journalist Marion Thompson. If the immunity comes from a vaccination, however, the chance of reinfection is 80%. Did you hear that, folks? 80% chance of reinfection from unnaturally acquired immunity from vaccinations. Dr. William Howard Hay has pointed out that in any epidemic of communicable disease, only a small percentage of the population contracts the disease. Most people are naturally immune, so if a man who has been vaccinated does not contract the disease, that really proves absolutely nothing. If he had not been vaccinated, the chances are he would not have contracted the disease anyway. We have no way of knowing. Further, quote, just because you give somebody a vaccine and maybe get an antibody reaction doesn't mean a thing. The only true antibodies, of course, are those you get naturally. And that's from Dr. Detman in an interview with Jay Patrick. Natural diseases are a lot safer than acute artificial complications from vaccinations. And that's a quote from Dr. Robert Mendelsohn, who I mentioned earlier. However, perhaps the strongest statement against the effectiveness of artificial immunization comes from Dr. William Howard Hay. Quote, it is nonsense to think that you can inject pus, which is most of the serums that we're talking about, into a little child and in any way improve its health. There is no such thing as immunization, but we sell it under that name. If we could by any means build up a natural resistance to disease through these artificial means, I would applaud it to the echo. But we cannot do it. The body has its own methods of defense. These defense methods depend on the vitality of the body at the time. If it is vital enough, the body will resist all infections. If it isn't vital enough, it won't, and you can't change the vitality of the body for the better by introducing poisons of any kind into it, and those poisons of any kind he's referring to are vaccines. Now, I am sure there are many of you out there who know more about science than I do, but I am a concerned citizen, folks, and I have truly done my homework. And let me tell you, vaccinations are poisons. They do not protect you. They are weakening our immune systems, and my research indicates that allergies are the direct result of large-scale immunization programs foisted upon us in the last 50 years. And isn't it weird how right now there is such a big push on to force every child and every person in the U.S. to be vaccinated for all kinds of diseases? Thanks, Bill Clinton. Now, be logical, folks. The only person you put at risk, even by the medical industry's own stupid logic, is yourself if you refuse to be vaccinated. Think about it. If everyone else is vaccinated, then they shouldn't get the disease, right? Then the only person you're putting at risk by not being vaccinated is you. Makes sense. Then how does the government dare to justify forced vaccination? Folks, it will only happen if you let them, and it is happening right now. I can assure you that even without any intentionally created diseases, many Americans will be dying over the next 10 to 15 years, and AIDS will be blamed. Be careful. Wouldn't it be ironic if AIDS as we know it did not exist at all? From my own research, I can tell you with complete confidence that the vaccines being foisted upon us can weaken our immune systems to the degree that AIDS-like symptoms and reactions will be all too common with or without AIDS. Do you remember what I read earlier about the genetic material being introduced into our bloodstreams from vaccinations and producing autoimmune diseases? Folks, we don't even need a government-created disease to have massive epidemic rates of immune failure, because that's what these vaccines are promoting. You see, folks, the medical industry can function much better if there are millions of mysteriously sick people out there. Wait and see. But add to this the fact that our government has been working on creating cancer and AIDS viruses for years, and linked to this the possibility of large-scale implantation programs done via vaccination programs. It fits so perfectly well together. They can implant you, weaken your immune system, and take your money all at the same time. Now, you've been conned another way, and this is by the word virus, because you think you know what a virus is, and you do not. Rest assured that viruses are not what you think they are, and I'm going to quote you a little bit more from Wayleen James to give you a hint. All living organisms, including bacteria and viruses, contain genetic material, which is DNA and RNA. In fact, live viruses themselves are genetic messages. Live bacteria and viruses can transfer their genetic information to animal cells, including human cells, which are taken up by other cells in the body. Although the body generally will not make antibodies against its own tissue, it appears that slight modifications of antigenic character of tissues may cause it to appear foreign to the immune system and thus a fair target for antibody production. Remember what I said earlier about how vaccines give us genetic material that get incorporated into our cells. Thus, vaccines lay the foundation for autoimmune diseases and other disorders of the immune system, such as rheumatoid arthritis, rheumatic fever, lupus, scleroderma, and a lot of other nasty diseases. It is reasonable to assume that our contemporary, quote, epidemic of allergies has at least some of its roots in the practice of vaccination. And again, that's from Wayleen James. Now, beware, folks. I have saved the best for last. The Clinton administration has buckled the pressure to implement a stepped-up mass vaccination program, and you and your children, if not already, will now be forced to endure all the truly evil effects of these terrible vaccines. Every day I see stories of the various state laws forcing Americans to inject these poisons into their veins, and don't buckle to the pressure, because you do not have to, because no one, absolutely no one, can force you to inject anything into your blood, and no one can force you or your children to be vaccinated. I've avoided vaccinations, and you can too. They will threaten you with not letting your kids go to school or not get a job or anything else they can think of, but it is all, excuse us folks, it's all bullshit. However, if enough people do not speak up now, we may all indeed be forced to take in these horrible poisons. Often, all it takes to avoid vaccination is a simple form you can type up for yourself referring to Senate Bill 942, number 3380, under title Exemption from Immunizations. And let me read that bill right now because it's really interesting. 3380. Immunization of a person shall not be required for admission to a school or other institution if the guardian, parent, or adult who has assumed responsibility for his or her custody and care in the case of a minor or the person seeking admission themselves files with the governing authority a letter or affidavit stating that such vaccination is contrary to his or her belief. The other thing you can do is go to your doctor and ask for a vaccination guarantee. Basically, what you say in this little form is that you're guaranteeing me that this vaccination will protect me and not cause any nasty side effects, or you will give me $1 million. And if the doctor refuses to sign that, you can refuse to get the vaccination. Now, even better, there's a book written by a lawyer who's done a lot in this area and has a lot of firsthand experience in circumventing vaccination laws. It's called Dangers of Compulsory Immunizations, How to Avoid Them Legally, by Tom Finn. Your best bet is also to get a copy of a little booklet called Vaccinations Do Not Protect by Eleanor McBean. Get a pen, folks. You won't find these books in Barnes & Noble. You can call 203-929-1557. That's 203-929-1557 and ask for Joe Willard. because the only place I know you can get any of the books I talked about today is from an organization called Natural Hygiene in Connecticut. That's 203-929-1557, and ask for Jo Willard. She's a wonderful woman who's done more to help free Americans from medical slavery than anyone I know in this country. The books I mentioned are not free, of course. You still have to pay. It's America. But ask Jo for the McMean book and the Tom Finn book, or even just get the McMean book, because in the McMean book are the forms that I mentioned earlier to exempt you. It'll be $4 or maybe $10 if you get both of them. You can even learn how to travel abroad without getting vaccinated, folks. Get educated and let your representatives in Congress know, and let your family doctors know, that you know what's going on, because you have to protect yourself and your kids. And these people, your congressmen and doctors, may not have any clue about any of this, and it's your responsibility to educate them. Because most doctors are woefully ignorant of these things and have also, like you and me, abdicated their responsibilities for most of their life. Now, hopefully, soon I'll do a follow-up to this tape where I'll tell you how this massive fraud about viruses, diseases, and vaccinations was perpetrated, and how you have been conned into believing that germs cause disease, which, shocking as that may sound, is totally false. Germs do not cause disease, and I will get to that sometime real soon so that you can hear about that here on the show. Now, I'll also tell you a little bit of medical history in that tape, a little history that you never knew about the great fraud perpetrated by Louis Pasteur, who was a plagiarist, who was the father of the modern germ theory, and also the father of vaccinations. And that, I'm sure, will also truly surprise you. Now, folks, refuse to be poisoned, refuse to be vaccinated, educate yourself about vaccines, and just for fun, ask Jo Willard at Natural Hygiene to recommend a book on how to be healthy the rest of your life. Because if anyone in this country knows the answer to that question, she does. She's a great person. She'll love to help you out. The number there again, 203-929-1557. That's Jo Willard at Natural Hygiene. She is indisputably the best source in America for information regarding immunizations and, indeed, how to become healthy. I don't own stock in the company or anything, by the way. I know I've plugged her quite a bit, but I'm only doing that because I know that she is the best source for this kind of information, so definitely give her a call. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a pleasure, and if you only remember one thing from all you've heard tonight, please remember this. The future truly lies in your hands, so get out there, take what you've heard tonight, and do something with it. Take care.
Wonderful research, ladies and gentlemen, and a fantastic presentation by one of our agents, CAGI member, Alex Loglia. And we look forward to his second installment, which will be aired on the hour of the time, concerning the theory that germs cause diseases. I hope you've learned something tonight, folks. I'm going to read you a paragraph from page 295 of my book, Behold a Pale Horse. This paragraph comes from The Plan, part of the ancient plan to conquer the world and establish a one-world totalitarian socialist government. I quote, "But you yourselves perfectly well know that to produce the possibility of the expression of such wishes by all the nations, it is indispensable to trouble in all countries the people's relations with their governments so as to utterly exhaust humanity with dissensions, hatred, struggle, envy, and even by the use of torture, by starvation, by the inoculation of diseases, by want, so that the cattle see no other issue than to take refuge in our complete sovereignty in money and in all else." Unquote. Good night, folks, and God bless you all.
Thank you.